Many years ago, I heard this story about becoming wise. An autobiography in 5 chapters. Chapter 1. I walk down the street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I'm lost. I'm hopeless. It isn't my fault. It takes forever to find a way out. Chapter 2. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in the same place. But it isn't my fault. It still takes a long time to get out. Chapter 3. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it is there. I still fall in. It's a habit. My eyes are open. I know where I am. It is my fault. I get out immediately. Chapter 4. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. Chapter 5. I walk down another street. I used to think this was what wisdom was. I call it experiential learning. This is a good story for you use, including me, who in my experience are very self-reliant and sometimes radically individualistic. But it's a difficult way to gain wisdom. This month, we've been exploring what it means to be a people of interdependence. I thought it would be interesting to explore the topic of becoming wise, which on its face could be seen as a solitary venture. While becoming wise certainly requires individual effort, wisdom comes from experience and traces its origins back to the dawn of human history. Humanity has sought answers to the age-old questions of what does it mean to be human? What gives meaning to a life? How shall we be of service to each other? What does it mean to be alive, knowing we must die? Religious and spiritual traditions have borne this wisdom across time. Our spiritual lives are where we reckon head-on with the mystery of ourselves and the mystery of each other. The title of this exploration comes from the recently published book by Krista Tippett, Becoming Wise, An Inquiry into the Mystery and Art of Living. Krista was a keynote speaker at this year's General Assembly in Columbus, Ohio. She hosts a program called On Being, which I first came to know over a decade ago as Speaking of Faith. Over the years, she's interviewed many thought leaders from the fields of science, religion, politics, and literature. Her guests have included the likes of Desmond Tutu, Maya Angelou, Jimmy Carter, and Thich Nhat Hanh, wise people. As I delved into this topic, I very quickly realized I had a tiger by the tail. Like Christine, I thought, who am I to be telling you what it means to be wise? If there's one thing that I've learned over the years, is that the more I learn, the more I know how little I know. A better title for this sermon might be Becoming Wiser. What does it mean to be wise? When I think of wisdom, I think of sages like King Solomon, Lao Tzu, the Buddha, Jesus. As part of my research for this sermon, I had several conversations about what it means to become wise. One person talked about the importance of being in the question. This makes sense to me as a common attribute of wise people, and it resonates with this bit of wisdom from the poet Rainer Maria Rilke. I would beg you, dear sir, as well as I can, to have patience with everything unresolved in your heart, and try to love the questions themselves, as if they were locked rooms or books written in a very foreign language. Don't search for answers which could not be given you now, because you would not be able to live them. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps then, someday far in the future, you will gradually, without even noticing it, live your way into the answer. And the point is to live everything. Try to love the questions themselves. Early in my journey as a UU, I heard an aphorism attributed to Wendell Berry. I would rather live with unanswered questions than unquestioned answers. It's uncomfortable to be in the question. Is becoming wise the same as our UU principle that we affirm and promote a free and responsible search for truth and meaning? I think our free and responsible search is necessary, a part of becoming wise, and yet, having knowledge is not the same as wisdom. In our reading by Howard Thurman, he makes the distinction between knowledge and wisdom, saying, "I need wisdom to cast a slow and steady radiance over all my landscape in order that things, choices, deeds may be seen in their true light, the light of the eternal and the timeless." Truth is often subjective. Well, wisdom is truth that has stood the test of time. A wise friend said, "Wisdom is constant and has valid equal application, independent of the contemporary situation." Wisdom is constant, timeless. The wisdom literature found in the Bible is a source of timeless wisdom. In my experience, we UUs don't look to the Bible much for wisdom. Another friend pointed me to the book of Proverbs in the Hebrew Bible. I had to dust off my Hebrew Bible commentary from seminary. The book of Proverbs has its origins in wisdom literature dating back 5,000 years to ancient Egypt and the Indian subcontinent. Wisdom consists in understanding the consequences of various courses of action. Proverbial wisdom is designed to help us lead a successful life. Various proverbs suggest that self-control is essential. Composure and reserve are recommended. The heated man is the antithesis of the wise. Who does that remind me of? True wisdom requires humility. A more contemporary view of wisdom comes from Krista Tippett's most recent book, Becoming Wise. According to Tippett, becoming wise is made possible by the gentle shifts of mind and habit, working patiently through the raw materials of our lives. As Christine shared in her reflection, there are five materials that are breeding grounds for wisdom. And I found this book really helpful in wrestling with what exactly is wisdom and how do we become wise. So the breeding grounds for wisdom are words, body, faith, hope, and love. I'm doing them in a little different order than Christine did. Words come first because words make worlds. But words that we use in discourse in our daily life are endangered by overuse and cliche. Tippett calls out tolerance as too small a word that allows, endures, indulges, but does not welcome. When I became a UU 20 years ago, we emphasized freedom, reason, and tolerance as our primary values. I like to think that we're moving from being tolerant to being truly welcoming. Words are integral to the art of conversation, a key to building community. Tippett poses the question, are we not of interest to each other? Too often we are sharing our opinions instead of our experiences. I can disagree with your opinion. I can't disagree with your experience. Sharing about our spiritual lives requires trust and safety. Parker Palmer, a Quaker teacher, likens the human soul to a wild animal in the backwoods of the psyche, sure to run away if cross-examined. Is it any wonder that we're hesitant to engage in theological discussions? Tippett describes the art of conversation she practices as sharing our stories in the service of probing together who we are and who we want to be. We sometimes forget that we are a spiritual community, not just a social organization or a debating society, though some of you might disagree. She also lifts up the importance of generous listening, powered by curiosity and vulnerability, and generous as opposed to simplistic questions, questions that invite honesty, dignity, and revelation. Imagine the difference this would make to our community, and especially in the current political discourse. In order to live together differently, we need to speak together differently. Body is another raw material. Being in our body gives us the capacity to be more present, but it can also limit our capacity to reach beyond ourselves if we're not sufficiently grounded. With our emphasis on reason and our fear of evangelical fervor, being in our bodies is very difficult for many UUs. Along with the Presbyterians and the Episcopalians, we're sometimes described as the frozen chosen, as opposed to holy rollers. With our origins in the Protestant Reformation and the Radical Reformation at that, we're resistant to being too emotional. We are also children of the Enlightenment. We think, therefore we are. The increasing popularity of yoga and mindfulness is putting us more in touch with our bodies and senses, balancing our focus between mind and body, head and heart. Tippett notes that bringing body and breath and intention together can shift our capacity to pay attention in moments and change the way we move throughout the world. Faith is another raw material. We have access to the spiritual wisdom of the ages as never before, no longer reliant on ministers, priests, rabbis. We are free to craft our own spiritual lives, resulting in the decline of religious affiliation and the rapidly rising number of people who identify as nuns, N-O-N-E-S, people claiming no religious affiliation. Faith is evolutionary in every culture and in any life. We have the choice and the ability to discern our own spiritual bearings. And there is hope. As Christine said, Tippett differentiates hope from optimism or idealism. Tippett says, hope, like every virtue, is a choice that becomes a habit, that becomes spiritual muscle memory. Spiritual muscle memory. I love that. It's a renewable resource for moving through life as it is, not as we wish it would be. We must remember that failure has always been a part of every human story of success. failure and vulnerability are the very elements of spiritual growth and personal wisdom. Our strengths and our flaws are part of our gift to the world. Hope is a function of struggle. Our shift from wish-based optimism to reality-based hope builds our resilience. And then there is love. Tippett says that love is the only aspiration big enough for the immensity of human community and the challenge of the 21st century. We need to look beyond love as a private good and see it more as a common good. Love is not just how we are with intimate partners and friends, but how we are together in public and with strangers. Tippett describes love as the superstar virtue of virtues and the most watered-down word in the English language. The metta, or loving-kindness meditation that we just did, begins with ourselves, expanding to the other, to our community, and finally the world. What if we aspired to love as a way of being? I know that's a challenge for me. Deep listening is a key virtue in becoming a beloved community. I love this definition of love by Natalie Battaglia, who is an astrophysicist, who thinks about love as dark matter, a force that permeates everything and yet remains essentially mysterious, something we've scarcely begun to understand and to mine. Makes me think of string theory that tells us that there are actually 10 dimensions, and yet we can only sense 4 to 5. We can answer the question, what is love, through a story about the last time we saw it. When was the last time you saw love? And then we can embody love by being love. Here's another story you may recognize if you're a fan of the West Wing TV series. It begins the same way as the first story, with a man falling deep into a hole in the sidewalk. And I'm hoping that this mic is on. Is this on? Thank you, Mike. Where am I? How did I get here? Oh, here comes a priest. Help! Help! Oh, he's stopping. He's writing something. A prayer for somebody stuck in a hole. Oh, here comes a doctor. Help! Help! Oh, he stopped. He's writing something. A prescription for somebody who's stuck in a hole. Not very helpful. Joe! Joe, help! I'm stuck down here. Joe, what are you doing? Now we're both stuck in this hole. But I know a way out. We can go together.
Get here.
I know a way out, and we can go together. Sometimes we're so stuck. Actually, let me switch mics again. Sometimes we are so stuck that we're unable to reach out, and we need others to reach in. Out of the mouths of babes. Becoming wise, we can choose to tough it out on our own, slowly figuring out how to get unstuck, and eventually finding our way down a different street. We can pray for wisdom, We can seek prescriptions from others. Or we can practice asking generous questions and listening generously, sharing our stories in the service of probing together who we are and who we want to be. We can be more embodied, balancing head and heart. We can craft our own evolving faith, enriching our spiritual lives. And as we reach out to each other in love, we move closer to realizing the beloved community within and beyond these walls. We can become wise together.